This is the Happy House Hunters group, and we meet up once a month, the first Tuesday of every month at 6 o'clock, and we go through the six F's of real estate, which is finding your real estate, then funding it, fixing it, flipping it, filling it, and finally, what is your freedom number? And so tonight we are talking to Harvey and Josh, and we're going to have a discussion about funding. We have Christy. She is my co-mod. So we've got Christy with us tonight. So welcome everyone. And I'm just going to turn it over to Harvey and Josh.
Thank you very much. Thanks again for having us on. It's good to be here as always. I'm Harvey. This is Josh. We are partnered together in a Homevestors franchise here in Columbus, Ohio. Primarily, we're into single family houses, small multifamily houses, and we go direct to seller. So we buy distressed properties directly from homeowners, and we fix them up to either sell them or rent them. You've probably seen UGG around town. That's what we're part of. We own an individually owned franchise here in Columbus, and we've been in business 2 whole years now. Really, the reason that we signed up for a Homevestors franchise is because they solved some of this puzzle for us. Finding deals is now easier for us than it was before we were a franchisee, because the leads come from Homevestors. And then they also have internal funding as well, which is nice if you're just starting out. So that's what we're all about. What did I miss?
No, I think that's it.
Now, are they a franchise? Did you actually buy like a franchise from them? Yeah. Is that how that works?
Yeah, but there's 12 of us here in Columbus.
Yeah, there's 10 or 12 of us here in Columbus, and then about 1,200 offices across the country.
Okay. Yeah,
Homevestors actually, statistically, I think like the number one home buyer in the country. Yeah, so,
and have been since 1998 or something. So there's 1,200 of us around the country. So the other thing we get, besides the leads, besides funding if you need it, is the support, camaraderie, and teaching from 1,200 other franchises around the country. So twice a year we go to big conventions and we sit in rooms like this, breakouts about very specific things, and learn from experts about specific real estate investing topics. So it's really accelerated our career, and we're really happy and proud to be a part of it.
You know, I do. I see the signs all around. And of course, even though I'm in the industry of investing, you know, I really don't know the nuts and bolts of how an organization like that works. My assumption was that it was a franchise and that there is, you know, extensive training and that sort of thing. But anyway, we're glad you're here, because it is quite a service for the community.
It is. Yeah. And I know we're here to talk about funding. Let's see, when we started our career, in real estate, we started it probably like a lot of people on this call, and we had a lot of questions. We knew we wanted to get into real estate, and even if we could find a deal, we got hung up on, okay, so if I find what could be a good deal, how the hell do I fund this thing? Yeah. And I think when you first start out, you only know about one option, right? You think, I need to go to a bank. I need to get a loan or a mortgage to pay for a property, for an investment. And you quickly realize that the kind of properties that you're going to want to buy, or most of us want to buy, a traditional bank is not particularly interested in. Not always, but often not interested in. So after some digging, you come up with all these different ways to pay for an investment property. So besides going to a traditional bank, Christy, what's another way that we might fund, besides the one we're talking about tonight, what are some other ways that we might fund a real estate deal?
I knew you were going to ask me a question I wouldn't know the answer to.
Well, there's some easy ones out there.
Okay, other than a traditional bank?
Yeah.
Well, you could do like crowdsource funding.
Yep. Yeah. Which Fund That Flip is an example of that, which is also a hard money lender.
Yeah. You could do hard money lending.
Yep. Yep. You can, what about if you owned a house already and you had some equity in it?
Oh, I was going to say that. Take out a HELOC.
Yep. HELOC's a good example.
Yeah. And I even have taken out some lines of credit on my investment properties, not necessarily even, you know, my home. I have a line of credit on my home, but I also have a line of credit on some of my investment properties.
Sure. Yeah. Or you could go to your wealthy aunt and ask her for some cash, right? Which is just a friends and family form of private money, which we're going to talk about. So we've done either hard money or private money, and we're exclusively private money now. And we'll dive into the mechanics and the specifics around private money. But I'll just at a high level talk about what I see as some of the benefits of private money and the drawbacks of private money. Okay, what is private money? Private money is cash money that comes from individuals, not from an institution, not a corporation, not any sort of official organization. So this could be a wealthy aunt, like Christy and I were talking about. It could be another investor. It could be really anybody that you run into out in the community. Some of the advantages of private money, they're pretty obvious. It's flexible. There's not usually an underwriting process. It's usually like, I think our process is like, we have this deal. Do you want to lend on it? Here are the numbers. Yeah, it's a yes or no. If it's a yes, they're usually wiring money in a couple days, and it gives you flexibility on the purchasing side that you wouldn't have otherwise. We can offer services to our customers and to our sellers that we wouldn't be able to offer if we were using a traditional bank or a hard money lender, because we can be quick, we can be flexible. Some of the other advantages are that oftentimes, 90% of the time, we get our rehab funds at the purchase closing, which is usually not the case if you're using a hard money loan or another type of loan. They'll make you front a portion of the rehab costs, prove that you've done that, submit paperwork to the bank to get to draw on your rehab account, which usually costs about $100 and some to have an inspector out to verify the work. But that doesn't happen when you have a private money lender most of the time. They're going to send the amount for acquisition directly to the title company to buy that property. And then they're also going to send the rehab funds on top of it, which then go to your bank, and then you can use those funds immediately and don't have to front any of the cost. Another advantage of private money is that they'll usually cover 100% of the purchase and 100% of the rehab. Whereas a hard money lender, some of the best terms you might get from a hard money lender would be 90% of total costs. So you still have to bring some money to the table there, which you wouldn't have to do with a private money lender. Am I missing any really big advantages?
Now, I think the only other one I was thinking, one of my favorite things about working with private money lenders is just more personal than working with an institution.
Yeah.
So you get that connection to, you know, a lot of the folks that we work with are lending out of retirement accounts. And so, you know, it's just
how does that hold things up, Josh? I mean, at some point, you know, they have to, if they're pulling money out of a retirement account, how quickly can they actually get the funds before they can loan it to you?
Yeah, we haven't had too many problems with that. We do have a couple lenders who need kind of like a 48-hour window to clear wires. For us, it's mostly self-directed retirement accounts. So I think they probably have a little less stipulation than maybe an account that you have money in the market. Although we have done that in the past, but we've borrowed money from folks who have taken loans out against like a 401k and then lent us the cash. But you know, with enough lead time, you can kind of figure all those things out. But yeah, I think it's just nice, like, you know, having that personally. I'm a relationship person, so I enjoy having that direct connection to somebody's retirement. versus just, you know, working with some institution and funding a, you know, a large hedge fund or whatever it is.
Bernetta wants to know, are there private money lenders that'll work with non-relative first timers?
Before I answer that, I was going to jump on what Josh said and say that working with people in a personal capacity is an added benefit. And then we're also providing them a service. Oftentimes we run into people who have cash on the sidelines or cash in a low interest bearing account, and we're able to give them a much higher rate of return than they would otherwise get if they weren't working with us. Which one nugget to think about and take away from this call, if you don't take away anything else, is the mindset shift between I'm going to go ask and badger people for money to instead thinking I'm providing a service where people can get a reliable rate of return, much higher rate of return they otherwise would get because I'm putting their money to work. A mindset shift that would really change the way you approach the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, at this point in our business, we exclusively in conversation or email or text or whatever it is, refer to these as opportunities. Because that's, you know, that's what they are. And that's, you know, that mindset shift. So
yeah, that's right.
And it's an opportunity for everyone involved, for all the parties.
Yeah.
Everybody wins.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Non-relative first timers.
Yeah. And then I think, you know, to
BW.
Did you say it was Amanda?
Bernetta.
Bernetta.
Oh, Bernetta, sorry. To Bernetta's point, I think a couple of the pros that we just mentioned can also be cons. So the nice thing, well, I guess going back to pros for a second, with private money lenders, anything is negotiable. Whether you're a first timer or you have a really great deal or really bad deal, or, you know, you want to do something obscure, like you want to buy a house and, you know, burn it down for some reason, like it, you know, when you're working with a private money lender, anything is negotiable, whereas with an institution, they're going to have very strict rules. So especially if you're a first timer, I think private money can be a good space, because if you have somebody who believes in you as a person, then they, you know, they'd be willing to help fund your deal. But that can also be a con of private money lending. So if you're new to the real estate business, and it is possible that you can get yourself into a situation where you are over leveraged. So if you don't have a lot of experience and you buy a bad deal and you have a wealthy, say you have a wealthy friend or whatever, who's willing to give you the money to the deal, to do the deal, you could very likely wind up, you know, underwater. Whereas if you're working with an institution, which I recommend to folks a lot of times, if you're new, working with an institution can be a good idea, because they're going to help, they're going to protect themselves first and foremost, but sort of as a byproduct of that, they're going to make sure that you stay within some safe parameters as well.
Right.
So, you know, that, like, you know, whether you have a lender, their institutional lender is giving you 80 or 90%, like those parameters are there for a reason.
And they'll usually do an appraisal, so they'll verify their purchase price. So that's nice to have.
Yeah. So they're going to keep you out of doing a bad deal. But to answer your question, yeah, anything with a private money lender is totally negotiable. So whether it's your first time or your 100th time, you know, you could get some capital.
Mm-hmm. My guess is for Bernetta is that as long as she has a good, strong deal, and the numbers work, then a private money lender would be interested. So at the end of the day, you just have to have a really good, strong deal, and the numbers have to really work for the private money lenders to be interested. So with that said, then yes, non-relative first timers could definitely use private money lending, as long as they were educated enough on their side to know that the numbers were good.
Yeah, I mean, it just kind of depends, though, because a good deal definitely helps with a lot of lenders. But I mean, we also have some lenders that we work with who know very little about the business that we're in. You know, we have lenders, I basically send them an address and a brief description of what our plan is, and, you know, maybe a couple photos, and then they agree to fund the deal. But for all they know, you know, if I tell them that a rehab estimate is $50,000, they have no idea whether that's accurate or not. It could be 100, it could be 150, you know, they don't really know the ins and outs of the business, and they're more, they want to verify that a house actually exists at that address. And then beyond that, they're funding, you know, to me and to our company.
Okay.
Based on their trust with us. So it really does just depend on the lender. And we have plenty of lenders too, who, you know, I send them a deal and they're like, you know, they try to convince me to let them take the deal because it's so good. But, you know, in the end, they just help us fund it. So it just depends.
Yeah. So downsides to private money. It all sounds great. And when I started this, private money was the mecca of financing deals, right? All the guys on Bigger Pockets, people on Bigger Pockets, they all talk about private money, but it's expensive. You know, you might get 8% from a hard money lender, and right now our most expensive private money lender is at 14%. And that doesn't play in too heavily if you're doing a quick flip over 90 days. Mm-hmm. But if you're in a position where you're trying to keep rental property like Josh and I are, and the refi process on the back end, you know, for us, it's at least 6 months. If there's shenanigans on the lender side, it can take up to 9 months. And if you're paying
14, there's usually shenanigans.
And if you're paying 14% on $100,000 over 9 months, then that can take what could have been a perfect bird deal on the front end and turn it into bringing several thousand dollars to the table at closing. That's something that we've just learned, and we're starting to relook at how we fund acquisitions on property that we think we're going to acquire.
Yeah. And I mean, yeah. So if you're doing one deal, you know, some of those numbers don't necessarily make sense, but I guess a little bit for context, like to date, we've borrowed and repaid about $2.5 million in private capital. So, you know, a percentage or 2 points over the course of, you know, all of the private money that we've raised can definitely make a difference.
Yeah, that's about the only disadvantage I can think of, is it can be expensive.
Yeah, and that's the most common one. Usually people, you know, that's usually the one that comes up the most. People say it's expensive, but that does come with trade-offs. I mean, again, like I said, you know, we might be paying more sometimes for that money, but I could work up a contract with some of our lenders on a bar napkin, you know, if we had to. So there's some in exchange for time and convenience there, which is basically kind of the, you know, how our business works anyways. But yeah, that's kind of, those are the two, I think, kind of primary cons of private money.
Any follow-up questions on any of that before we get into the nuts and bolts? Nuts and bolts guy.
I guess the next question in the series that we usually get from folks is, where do we find private money? And this is a discussion that comes up a lot. I think I just saw it today, like in one of the local Facebook groups. But you know, I think we kind of already touched on it, but what I see a lot, especially recently, is people posting like in Facebook groups looking for private money lenders. At a really high level, that is like the antithesis of a way to find a private money lender. That's a good way to find somebody who wants to scam you. But you know, at least in our experience, the private money lenders that we work with are folks that we built relationships with. And so there are other real estate investors or just individuals with, you know, retirement accounts. So unfortunately, there's not, at least I haven't found a good way to just kind of shotgun find private money lenders. It's a bit more of a sniper kind of thing, but probably the biggest strategy that I use is I just always talk about private money. You know, anytime I'm in conversations with folks who I think have money, or if I overhear like alternative investments or people talking about retirements, I'll try to fish into the conversation private money lending. And then even just, you know, kind of in my elevator pitch for our business, you know, we try to work in that we help, you know, other people fund their retirement through the deals that we do inside of our business. So that's one really big way. And it's been the most productive for us. Other real estate investors is a good one, especially when you're looking in the world of self-directed retirement accounts. I'm not an attorney or, financial planner or anything like that, but there's rules around self-directed retirement accounts and whether you can kind of lend that money to yourself or how that money gets used once it's lent out. So a lot of times we work with lenders who they have that money set aside and they really only feel comfortable lending it out to other people versus putting it into their own business. So we work with several real estate investors who they understand real estate. They know that it's a really good asset for investing in, and they know what kind of returns they can get working with us. But they have a pool of funds that they can't use inside of their own business. So they need another investor, even though they know the business. And some of these guys are doing a lot more volume than we are. So even though they know the mechanics, they need to take this pool of money and, you know, diversify with it. So that's a pretty big bucket of group of folks that we're working with.
Some of those self-directed IRAs make it punitive if they use the money in their own business. So the only way they can invest it is with another investor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But again, you know, as real estate investors, they know that they can give that money to a friend, a fellow investor, and get significant higher returns than they're likely or historically getting in the market. So,
yeah. And that's a plug for self-directed 401ks in general. If you have old retirement funds from old jobs that you don't work anymore, it's not that difficult to, in fact, I have a really good contact that helped me with mine, you know, a couple $1,000 and some paperwork, and you can roll those funds over into a self-directed 401k, have checkbook authority from those funds and start buying passive real estate or lending on the real estate pretty quickly.
Harvey, I'd love for you to put that in the chat, if you can put your finger on that contact information, because that would be great info for our listeners.
Sure.
Yeah, and that's that's something that's kind of on my radar too. And I think of that as like raising private money 201, where we can get to the place where we're kind of educating on others on how to set up those retirement accounts. We know some folks that are doing that now, but we haven't necessarily gotten there yet. Most of the folks we're working with already have those accounts set up. But it is nice having Harvey in our business because he has a self-directed account and is doing some lending out of that. So, when we have folks that are kind of exploring the option, I can easily just say, hey, Harvey does it. You know, he doesn't lend that money inside of our business, only out. It's a good contact to have in-house for that. Any other questions on like finding the money or?
Well, I'm sitting on an IRA right now, and I am thinking about rolling it over to a self-directed so that I can use it in real estate. So that's just something I'm just now starting to explore.
Yeah. Well, there you go, everybody. You just found yourself a new private lender.
All right. So there's the contact information for self-directed IRA /401k.
To host and to set it to everyone, I can copy it.
The other, one of the other pros that we didn't really talk about, and next I'll kind of get into like how we structure how we structure these arrangements. But one of the other pros, especially from the lender side, is one of the best things about investing in real estate is that the that your loan is secured by the asset in most cases, not always, but in a lot of cases, especially if you're lending 100% of the cost, generally your loan is going to be secured by the asset. So oftentimes when we're borrowing money, we place a mortgage on the house. So if we ever go into default and we stop paying back the loan, then the lender is going to get the asset. And generally that's good security because a lot of the deals that we're doing, you know, they have roughly like 30% equity in the deal. So in theory, at any given time, the property is always more valuable than the loan that it's securing. And so if we were to go, you know, into default and the property got foreclosed, they could sell the property and recoup their funds. That's one of the main, not even, you know, the interest that for a lot of folks, that's the kind of the main draw is that additional security. Whereas, you know, if you're investing in like, say a tech startup or something, there's no security. And, you know, it is possible that all of your money could go to zero. Now, generally something like that could have higher returns, higher risk, higher reward. But, you know, in what we do, it's fairly secure in that sense. So usually when we agreed to borrow money from somebody, we, you know, like I said, there's a mortgage against the property. And so that gets filed through the title company at closing. And then it doesn't always have to be that way. Sometimes the deals we do have personal guarantees. So we're, you know, we're taking title to the property inside of our LLC. But we may also, depending on the situation, sign a personal guarantee where myself or Harvey just saying, hey, if the LLC, you know, goes out of business or whatever it is, we promise to take care of this note. But there have been times too, where sometimes we do deals, without the mortgage and just on a promissory note. So again, it's kind of negotiable and it just depends on the lender you're working with and what they feel comfortable with. But those are kind of the three main documents that are going to come through for when we secure a loan, a note, a mortgage, and then a promissory note.
Bernetta, I don't remember Kathy saying that, but if you are looking for a lender, reach out to me. I'm looking to lend and I'm happy to look at whatever deal you have.
Yeah, Bernetta, I don't have mine rolled over to a self-directed yet, so it'll be a minute before I'm prepared to do that. But thanks for checking.
Yeah, Bernetta, what you should do is set yourself a calendar reminder for like 3 months to check back with Kathy.
In the meantime, check in with Harvey. Yeah.
So things like that, like promissory note, mortgage, even the rate of return, these are all things and tools that you and we use to make lenders feel comfortable, right? Mm-hmm. What are other ways that we can, especially if you're new, just making the lender feel comfortable working with you?
Yeah. Well, and I probably should have given a larger legal disclaimer there. Those are documents that we've been, you know, advised and coach through using through our attorney. And so, you know, if you're going down this road with a private lender, I would recommend working with an attorney. Now, it depends. You might work with a lender who has a lot of experience and they may just say, hey, don't worry about it. I've got these documents from my attorney and we can just go ahead and fill these out. But even then, I would still recommend consulting your own attorney to make sure those, you know, what you're agreeing to is fair. And reasonable, but so definitely I would consult with an attorney. You know, and we have lenders, some of the lenders that we work with, they have attorneys on their side. Some of them just trust the documents that we use. So it just kind of depends. But yeah, like Harvey said, most of those things are geared towards just making the lender feel comfortable and securing the loan. Some of the other things, I think just like in any relationship or business, one of the biggest things, and is a process that we continue to kind of build out, is investor relations. So, you know, with an institutional lender, you don't need necessarily to like call in and give them an update. But like private money lenders really enjoy when you just, you know, a lot of times for me now, especially with the relationships that we've built, it's just a quick text. You know, hey, we finished the demo and, you know, we're starting to put it back together. Or especially when, you know, we get towards the end of the project, hey, the rehab's done. Here's a couple of photos. So just kind of keeping up with the lenders, really good communication. It's a little bit front loaded. So when we're, you know, once we agree to lend on a property and we have closing coming up, daily or every other day communication leading up to closing, just to make sure like everybody knows what's going on and everybody has the information that they need, and title companies communicating with the lender, those sorts of things. And then just, yeah, kind of regular updates throughout. And then whatever, whether we're selling the property or refinancing it, really good communication too on the back end. Like, hey, we listed the property for sale. We're in contract with the buyer. Tentatively, the closing is set for this date. One thing that I'm working on now is, unfortunately, like closings, well, when you're wiring a significant amount of money, $50,000, $100,000, $150,000, there is a certain amount of work that needs to be done by the lender. I wish I could eliminate all of that work, but they do just oftentimes need to go to the bank or initiate a wire transfer or, you know, sign some documents with me or whatever it is. So just communicating those things that you need, making sure folks have enough time to, if they do need to run out to the bank, like making sure that that's on their radar a few days in advance, and those sorts of things.
I have a question. If I let's say I have a deal and I've encountered somebody who says, yeah, that's a good deal, I want to lend on it. Now what? What do I do? Who do I put them in contact with? What are the steps?
Yeah. Well, really, yeah. So the next steps in that and would be creating the documents. So generally what we're going to do in our company is once they agree to fund the deal, we're going to go and we're going to start creating all the documents, the note, the mortgage, promissory note, whatever that lender needs. And then those documents are going to go to the title company to start being processed. And then I also send those documents as much ahead of time as I can, especially if it's with a new lender. That way they have plenty of time if they want to take those documents to an attorney to have them reviewed. They have time to do that, or just to look them over, make sure they, you know, they agree with all of the rates and terms. I try to communicate before we start filling out legal documents. I try to be very clear about communicating, you know, what rate we're offering, what terms we're offering, the timelines, you know, all the sort of nuanced things that are in the contract. And then just giving them ample time to review the contract and making sure they understand, like, you know, it's a legally binding document. And
review the contract or review the,
the loan documents.
Yeah.
The biggest thing that I guess we didn't touch on this much yet, but the biggest issue that I've run into with raising private capital is the amount of time. So we have like a lot of lenders right now who would be willing to lend us $50,000 or $100,000, but they would like to see it again in 2-3 months, which, you know, with our business model is just not realistic. We do occasionally get out of deals in under 2 months or under 3 months, but generally we're looking at like a 6-9 month time frame. So if folks are not like 1,000% comfortable, you know, with not seeing that money for 6-9 months, then we won't borrow it because, you know, like we said earlier, we could get into some funny business on a refinance. I mean, we've definitely had deals that have gone, you know, kind of the full month, the full term of the 9 months. So just based on appraisals or whatever kind of issues come up. So, but yeah, so just making sure that the lender's comfortable with all that stuff. And then it's kind of facilitating the relationship between them and the title company. So really the title company is going to kind of run with it from there. Once we get close to the closing They're going to, you know, be dealing with the lender directly, facilitating the wiring, and, you know, whatever signing of the documentation and notarizing things that's needed.
So is the lender sending me the money and then I'm using it to, or how do I get the funds?
So the title company is going to connect directly with the lender, right? You know, 2 days ahead of closing. And so the private money lender is going to wire to the title company. And then the reason that we do it that way, we have, again, anything in private money is negotiable. I have plenty of private money lenders who will just wire funds directly to our bank account if that's what we ask. But generally we don't. And the reason that we usually have funds route through the title company is because the loan documents that secure their funds against the property are generally signed at the closing. So they're signed and notarized at the closing. So the title company is a good intermediary because the lender can wire their funds to the title company and the title company keeps them secure until the documents are officially signed and notarized, securing the loan. And then the title company, if there's any extra, they'll release funds to the seller of the property that we're buying. And then if we've raised extra funds for the rehab, you know, or other cost, those funds will then get wired back to us. So that's kind of the relationship there with the title company. They're the intermediary, making sure that the funds are secure before they're released.
And then when do we pay them back?
Yeah, so most, again, totally negotiable. Some lenders, you know, on a traditional mortgage, you're going to be making principal and interest payments, you know, starting on the next month or whatever it is. You'll be making those payments monthly for a set period of time. There are some private lenders we've worked with in the past. We've had arrangements where we make interest-only payments. So we don't pay any portion back towards the principal of the loan. We just pay the interest that's due every month, and then we pay the rest when we sell or refinance the property. And then traditionally, the setup that we use the most is that we make no payments throughout the duration of the loan, and we pay the entire principal and interest sum at when we exit the property, whether it's through a refinance or a sale.
And so that's when the lender actually makes their money, is when you actually sell the property.
Yep.
I want to welcome Ryan has tapped in, Paul, Jonathan. We still have Bernetta with us. Paul wants to know any tips on how to get started lending as a newbie. He said, I've seen minimum investment levels on the higher end, 50,000 plus, that might keep people from getting into the game. So my question, if I could rephrase that, is have you borrowed from more than one private money lender for the same deal?
Yeah. we have in the past, and there's a lot of different ways to structure that. I think actually I just looked earlier. We've done a deal where we had four lenders.
Okay.
In an ideal world, we prefer one, but that's not always the case. So it just kind of depends on what certain people, you know, how much capital certain people have available. When we have one lender, it's best case scenario because it just keeps everything really clean. So if we have one person who lends 100% of the cost that we need to do a project, they get a first position mortgage on the property. And so then they don't have any, there's no competition for the security. So they can sleep well at night knowing if anything, if the loan goes into default, there's nobody else there. It's a really easy case for them to say, this loan's in default, I get this property. Traditionally, what we do is oftentimes we have a second lender. So if we need 150,000 for a property, we might have one lender who has 100 and one who has 50. Generally, the person with the 50,000, they're going to take a second position mortgage. So it's technically less secure, especially depending on the equity that's in the property. And so you know, we have several lenders who are absolutely not comfortable with being in a second position. We have some lenders who could care less. So, you know, and then getting into, if you get beyond that, there's more issues that can come up. But I mean, you know, you could have lenders who, you could have a handful of lenders that you just sign promissory notes with, and then so nobody really has security. But also when you get into lots of lenders on one property, I think there's also some, like, and you could get involved with the like SEC and different things like that. So big groups and group funding thing, those are kind of different parameters. But yeah, and you know, we, I think the smallest amount of money that we've ever borrowed is maybe $20,000. Which, you know, occasionally it comes up if we need 120 for a deal and one lender has 100, then we might be able to find somebody who has 20,000 and wants to take that second position and make a little bit of money. But much less than that, it gets difficult because it's just hard to squeeze into the right, you know, it's like a puzzle piece that doesn't quite fit in many places. And then there's a certain, you know, on our side, there's a certain amount of work that comes with processing the loan documents and, you know, nurturing those relationships and things like that. So much less than that. And even then, you know, if you put a $10,000 loan out with us, you know, the interest that you're getting repaid isn't a huge amount of money. So sometimes it much less than that can be difficult to work with.
So Paul, I would first ask you, are you sure you want to lend, let's say 20 grand and not put that money to work as part of a purchase of an actual property? Your return, if you put that as a down payment on an actual rental property, for instance, or even a flip with a hard money company, your return on that money is likely to be greater than if you lent that at 10% to us or another investor. So it just depends on your goals. You know, what is your time look like? Do you have the time to pick up a property and see it through a rehab or into a refi? And if not, and if you are just strictly looking to lend, then I would say just like you would go looking for a property or go looking for somebody to lend to you, do the same if you are looking to lend. So tell as many people as you can that you're looking to lend, get into the networks, and then figure out who the players are and start calling them. Let them know, hey, I see you're doing these deals. I'm new to the scene. I have money to lend. I don't know if you use private money or not, but would you mind saving my number and you know, look me up the next time you're looking for private money? Or what deals do you have right now in the pipeline that you don't have lenders on yet? How can I help you? Can I lend on those deals? That's a great way to get your foot in the door.
We have a question from Ryan. He says, do you ever use private money for a long-term hold? For example, using a private lender for a 25-year amortized schedule as opposed to traditional lending?
Yeah.
That's a tough one.
Yeah. Hey, Ryan, good to see you. So we have not done that, but it's an option. I mean, again, in private money, anything's negotiable. Generally, the hang up there sort of would be cost. And so if we had a private lender who was willing to fund, you know, on a 25-year AM at the same rate that we would be able to get from the bank, then yeah, we would be happy to do that.
Oh yeah.
You know, actually even slightly higher than what we could get from the bank, because it would be just really clean, easy, and simple. But generally, you know, it probably doesn't always make sense for folks to lend that amount of capital at that low of a return.
For that length of time.
For that length of time, exactly. So
it could offer equity.
Yeah. There are different ways you could set it up. We haven't done it. You know, we primarily right now are working off of the BRRRR strategy. So we, you know, we're recycling that private money out and putting institutional capital in behind it, you know, 3, 4, 5%. And that's hard to compete with in the private sector. Now, I know, like, if you get really higher up the food chain, like if you're looking at like hedge funds and things like that, they may have some different arrangements where they're, you know, holding these properties with cash, but they might be working out of a pool of, you know, $1 billion or something. So it's a little bit different, but.
Yeah. Yeah. Private money, obviously we've discussed its advantages and disadvantages, but it's just one tool in a toolbox of being able to acquire property. You know, for us right now, it's our main tool, but we're starting to see how it could be just a tool and not our main tool.
Yeah. And there's a couple other things. I mean, that can be whole entire calls in themselves. But you know, like one of the other things that we've utilized in the past is where we've used money from a hard money lender to do a project. And then, you know, maybe they're only lending 80 or 90% of the total cost for the project. Well, we'll bring in a private money lender to help cover the gap. So we've done that a few times in the past. And the other thing that, you know, private money, the other sort of setup there is, if you start talking about creative financing, there's some creative financing options that I think actually Dave Payerton, for those of you guys who know him, he posted earlier in the cream that seller financing was private money in disguise. So, you know, there are some creative financing options that you can work out with a seller of a property where basically they're becoming your private money lender. So that's a whole nother call. And there's, you know, infinite different ways to structure that, but something kind of, I think that's a nice little mindset shift too, where you're thinking about, you can work out a deal with a seller where they're also wrapping in, the funding of the project. We haven't done much of that, to date, but that's also an option.
We did that on a salon. We bought it on a land contract. So the seller actually was carrying the note for us. And so the seller was funding it. And then we just made payments on a land contract, but we brought all of our own rehab money. They didn't give us the additional funds to rehab. They just carried the note on the initial structure. And we just set it up on a 10-year note. And this was an older couple, and they did not want all of the funds all in 1 year because of capital gains, because it was an investment property. And this way we could spread out their purchase, what they were going to receive as the purchase price of this property over a 10-year period instead of receiving it all in one tax year. And so it was a win-win for both of us because we were able to spread out the purchase and they were able to spread out the capital gains.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would just encourage, if you haven't started in the real estate game yet, or if you're brand new, there are too many funding options out there for that to be the deterrent for you to take action and to make your first purchase. If you go look for a deal and then you have a deal, getting that deal funded, especially with a community around you like this one, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. So don't let that stop you from taking action.
Yeah. And I think my sort of closing point, I think a lot of, for me, a lot of the private money relationships really come down to like in track record and integrity. So, you know, I've talked about this before on other calls and, you know, I've said in the past, I honestly think I would give anybody on this call, like my entire list of private money lenders. And I would imagine that very few of them would lend out, at least on an initial call, you know, to anybody who reached out to them, because in most cases they're lending to us because they've known us for a certain period of time. They, you know, they see how we run our business. We built up some rapport with them. And so, you know, if you have folks that you think are potential private money lenders in the future, you just have to kind of start building those relationships. Make sure that you're talking to them about your business, about the real estate transactions that you're doing, and sort of start planting that seed now. I mean, I just had a conversation with somebody recently who I've known for a little over 2 years, and I've known from day one that he's a private money lender. And he like just agreed to start funding some deals for us. Now he hasn't had available capital yet because he has it out on other projects, but you know, that's 2.5 years maybe that I've been nurturing that relationship, and they're just now agreeing to fund some projects for us. So it definitely takes some time to build up.
Well, Jonathan, he put in the Q&A, he said, how did you turn people into private lenders for their deals?
What's the question?
He actually typed in, how did you turn people into private lenders for their deals? I'm not sure exactly what he's asking. Yeah.
Well, so he may be asking about the creative financing portion. Maybe he can clarify. But, you know, I think like I mentioned earlier, for us, most of the folks that we're borrowing from now were already private money lenders. And I think we're starting to make a little bit of a transition. Harvey and I have been looking at some bigger deals like multifamily and things. I think when we get over to bigger deals, we may make a transition into where we're kind of coaching people into becoming private money lenders so we can get access to more capital. But to date, most of the folks that were already lending or were already at least aware of the concept.
Josh, think back to your very first private money deal that you connected with. How did you approach that first person? Because you at that point wouldn't have had the experience. And so now here you are looking for private money. How did you go about that? What did that look like?
Yeah. So actually the first person that I ever borrowed private money from was Harvey. and it was well before we had gotten into business together. We had started running our meetup group, or maybe was it before?
Yeah, I don't know. Somewhere around
around the time we started our meetup group, which for those of you who don't know, the Newbie Real Estate Investors Group. But to your point earlier, it was a really good deal, and it was only the second real estate deal I'd ever done. I have a 4-unit in Clintonville, which I still live in, and this was the next deal that I had done. And it was just a really home run deal, and I was just talking through it with Harvey. And, talking about needing the funds, because my wife and I were very concerned about taking the deal down, because every dollar that we had, we were putting into self rehabbing our 4-unit. Huh. Almost immediately after we bought the 4-unit, and we were like in the throes of that deal. And so it was like, private money was the only option. We did not have the capital to do it ourselves. And Harvey suggested that he had some money to lend on the deal. I had to go raise a little bit more. I had to get, another 15 or 20 grand, but I got that from a family member. But to your point earlier, it was just such a good deal that it's a duplex on the west side of Columbus in a little neighborhood called Westgate, if you guys are familiar. We paid $55,000. And we put about $30,000 into the rehab. So we were all in for about $85,000. And I actually just had it appraised last week. I'm in the process of refinancing it and appraised for $194,000.
Josh, I was there when you completed that particular rehab, and then you had a meetup group where we actually got to walk through that one. And I remember seeing that one when you did it. I love it. I love that.
And actually, that's a low appraisal to it. It should have been higher, but you know.
Bernetta put in, may I have contact info for you guys, or take her info? She put her number in there, and Harvey has already listed his. So thank you. I'm just going to put my website in there because you can reach me through my website, and everything that I do is all in one place. So it's easy to find me. And that way, Joshua has his in there. So that way you can reach Josh and Harvey. And once we're finished with the call, I will take the replay and put it in our platform, which is if you just go to KathyBinner.com and scroll down to the Happy House Hunters free meetup, you can click through there and all of our replays are there. So KathyBinner.com, scroll down to Happy House Hunters free replay. And I will also put Harvey and Josh's contact information with this particular replay so that you'll be able to find it as well. So also I want to mention, and I'm I'm going to check my time here. Yep, we're almost at the top of the hour. And is your newbie group, do you have some meetups already scheduled for 2022?
Yeah. This first quarter of this year, we were doing kind of collaborating with another local investor, Nick Eiffel. Mm-hmm. And we were doing a series on how to estimate rehab costs. The next one is, sorry, I'm trying to find it.
I think it's the second or third.
I think it's the third Thursday. Yeah, so it's going to be Thursday, February 17th. Now, the best thing to do is go to Newbie Real Estate Investors Group and join the Facebook group, because this particular meeting has gotten a lot of attention. And we're actually going into the house with a group of people, and we're kind of going through the house room by room and helping folks kind of determine, the cost to repair certain things. So we can only have so many people there, much fewer than who want to be there. So we've kind of been doing a bit like a lottery type thing for those events. So if you go to the Facebook group, all the info is there, and we'll be releasing the info for the one here coming up in February later this week. And then we'll do a drawing and make sure we get as many people as we can there.
And I know you guys are going to feel really, really bad for me, but I'm in Florida still on February 17th. So I won't be able to get in your lottery there for this one, but you are on my list to get involved in your third Thursday meetups on whatever it is that you have going on, because I want to support you guys. And also with our Happy House Hunters group, I want to, bring it to the attention of our meetup group so that we can support you guys as well.
And even outside of that group, I mean, one thing that we didn't really talk about, but if anybody here, has deals that they're looking at, they need help with, we are more than happy to help try and collaborate on certain things. If you need help with rehab costs, or, you have a sweet deal that you want to take down, but you can't figure out the funding, or what you need help negotiating a deal that you're direct to seller on, whatever it is, feel free to reach out. We're happy to collaborate and joint venture or whatever it is on.
Yeah.
Get some deals done.
Like Brunetta, give us a call. She says that she's, funding is where she's stuck. I would love to ask a lot of questions about that.
Yes, have that conversation. And also for the Happy House Hunters group, which is what you're on tonight, is the Happy House Hunters. We do our first Tuesday. And again, we're going through the six F's of real estate. And tonight is funding. But we also have a mastermind, and we have a smaller group of folks, and we do what's called boots on the ground. And so the first week of every month, we take a group of folks, quite like what you guys are doing, and we actually take them through properties and point out what we see, that those of us that are a little bit more seasoned, and we do our rehab list on, if you were to buy this property, let's work the numbers. And I'm a firm believer, and for all of you that are on this call, and I know some of you personally, Ryan and Jonathan, for those of you that are on this call, if you look at enough properties and you work the numbers enough, you're going to know when a good deal falls in your lap. You're just going to know it. And so just make it a habit to work so many deals a week as a practice run, because you want to know when it's a good deal. You don't want those to get away from you. And then start looking at how you're going to do some funding ahead of time. Just have some ideas kind of in your back pocket, so when that deal does fall in your lap, you have your go-to people that you can go to right away and let them know what the deal is. So that's my best advice. Any great advice from you guys before we go?
I'll back that up. I think that's great advice. The trope or whatever that I've heard before is dig the well before you're thirsty.
Yes, absolutely. Harvey, what's your number one tip or trick?
No, I heard a phrase recently that said commit and then figure it out. I would say get out there, take action, look at deals, make offers. If you get an offer accepted, then figure it out. Yeah, you can have some of the well dug ahead of time, but go take the action, go start moving things forward, and then figure it out.
Get involved in these meetup groups, get involved in this network. Again, so that deals come along to connect.
Yep.
Christy, any words of wisdom for us today?
Come on, Christy.
No, I just want to say thank you very much to both of you.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you so much. I want to say thanks to Bernetta and Jonathan and Ryan and all the others that were on the call with us. Thank you for your questions. Thank you for Josh and Harvey for being here and sharing with us. And Christy, as always, thank you for tapping in. And again, the replay will be at kathybinner.com. Scroll down to Happy House Hunters and you'll find all the information, and I'll put all of Harvey and Josh's contact information as well. So we will see everyone next time. So thank you so much for coming.
Thanks, Kathy.
See you. Thank you.
All right. See you guys. Bye.